Welcome to Live, Let, Thrive, a podcast about the Airbnb life, the share economy, and everything in between. Here are your hosts, Micah and Steve.
Hello, hello, hello.
And welcome back to another exciting episode
of Live,
Let,
Thrive. What's up, Micah, man?
I am good, Stevie Stacks. How you doing on this rainy, hot Friday?
Sticky muggy outside, man. And this podcast is about to be sticky and muggy too. You know, I don't know what that means, but whatever. We're gonna have fun today on this episode 253 of your favorite short-term, mid-term Airbnb VRBO podcast in the world, coming at you from Arlington and Fort Worth, Texas.
Let's go, man. So speaking of, you said we're an Airbnb podcast. Airbnb just released a bunch of new stuff. Have you taken a look at it?
You know, we on the podcast with Fede and Mike Brown, they talked about the new host release, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we spoke a lot about, or they spoke a lot of, about that stuff. It sounds pretty interesting, man, how you can like, you know, split payouts with your co-hosts and stuff like that. Which is great, you know, because it usually takes us co-hosts. We got to wait till the end of the month to get paid for all those payments coming through while the hosts are enjoying a nice fat, you know, pocketbook while we're waiting for all the scraps at the end of the month. So it's good that we can like get some money, some capital, some precious, precious capital infused into our business, you know, in live time. That's great.
Yeah. So, what did you guys talk about in between the lines of what's going on and the things, some of the stuff that they mentioned?
You know, I guess in between the lines, it sounds like the Airbnb is trying to really promote midterm stays to long-term stays on their platform.
Yeah, I always pay attention to like what's going on in the news. It seems like the people, the midterm people are kicking their ass. Like they're taking their money off platform. So the article, you know, the Yahoo article before the release came out, a Yahoo article was dropped and was written and Yahoo Finance. They said, hey, Airbnb stock's down 6%. They were like, it's because of he said their top hosts, meaning the top upper echelon of hosts, are competing with Airbnb. They're competing with them. And you start to see a lot of people getting into the midterm rental game. And most, you know, people, some people, you know, they get their midterms on platform, but they know starting to see, it seems like Airbnb is noticing a lot of midterm is taken off their platform. So it seems like they are, one of the things they're doing is reducing fees for over 28 days, which is a cool thing. One thing is I've never really liked people booking long-term because, you know, they still have to collect money from the guest. They don't have to pay up front. So you're basically on a payout rotation, but, yeah, that was interesting. I noticed the same thing. They're wanting to get into the midterm rental space.
Now, here's what I equate that to a little bit, because, you know, guests have always been able to, if they wanted to venture off platform outside of Airbnb, they could find us, you know, they could find a lot of us hosted by Argus Rentals, you know, and that's a unique name. Or some people put logos, or some people even put their damn phone number and website on their profile page, or they were doing stuff like that, you know, and so it's easy to find them. Now, you know, a regular guest out there who's just getting accustomed to Airbnb, they like how it works and everything like that. Then they're like, I don't know if I want to leave the safety and just send this stranger my money. And hopefully when I get there to Florida, you know, hopefully I have a place, you know what I'm saying? Whereas Airbnb, they got me covered. If they stand me up, they'll put me somewhere else. And so it's always been, and then for the same thing for hosts, there's so many hosts out there that are like, let's keep it in Airbnb. You know, I don't, what happens if this family or this person breaks something or destroys my house, at least Airbnb's got my back somewhat. And whereas I'm on my own, if this guy, you know, destroys my house and all I got is a $500 or $1,000 deposit to show for it, and I can't really go after him because I don't got his credit card info and all that. So Airbnb acts as like a safe haven in a way for both hosts and guests. And this is what it reminds me of, man, because think back to, and you know, I always do crazy metaphors, but think back to the Napster days, right? So when we're going way back in time, when me and Micah were young, well, Micah's still young, but back when Napster came out, before Napster, it was CDs, and that's how you got your music, right? And before that, cassettes, tapes, you know, record industry could always move units. They moved units. That's how they made most of the money in the record industry. And so Napster came out and started taking this stuff off of the CDs and putting it on the internet so anybody can, you know, share files, share songs, share CDs. And all of a sudden, oh, crap, you don't got to buy a CD anymore. You can just download it onto your computer. It was sweet for us music lovers. It sucked for the record labels. But what soon started happening, people started getting all kinds of viruses and stuff on their computers because they, you know, a lot of these sites like Napster, you know, they some people would plant some bad stuff in there and it would get on your computer and mess up your computer or could mess up your computer. So at the same time, Apple came up with their iTunes, right? And the cool thing they did was charge 99 cents a song. Music industry hated that. Fuck no, that's a, you know, you're not going to just sell my songs for 99 cents. But anyways, they said you have no other choice. And people were gladly paying 99 cents for songs. iTunes became huge because the safety aspect. They can go get it for free on Napster or Pirate Bay or whatever sites, but you were risking, you know, getting a virus on your computer. What I'm seeing is Airbnb is doing, okay, if there's such a disparity in price, if they're going to book a month stay through Airbnb at a place, it's going to cost them $5,000 or $6,000. Whereas if they book direct with that person, $3,000 or $4,000, that's enough to get this person to maybe take a risk to save some money. Now, if we bring it back down closely to the price that they did it inside or outside the platform, then they'll be more tempted to stay inside Airbnb and have those protections and not pay like double the price. So that's what I equate it to. I brought it all the way back around. So there, boom.
Yeah. I think they're more or less targeting new guests, kind of like what you said at the beginning, because I think their guest retention is the problem. You know what I mean? Because even if, like, I was on a post earlier today and a dude said, man, Airbnb's for the birds, I'm doing direct. And then like some people who weren't even hosts came on there and they were like, oh yeah, I always go and look to see if I can go find this person. And I think Airbnb kind of knows that. And I think you kind of hit it on the head with, okay, well, if some guests are going to go find it, let's make sure we try to appeal to the new guests coming in. Like, hey, go ahead and book direct. I mean, not directly with Airbnb, and let's kind of keep that customer. But I think that customer retention is how long can they retain that customer? You know what I mean? If this person's emailing them, and one of the person said the post, she goes, yeah, one of the people I just stayed with out in, where was she at? I just stayed out in Tennessee with. I just got an email from them and they said I can book direct. So it's like, you know, hosts are getting savvy and then guests are kind of getting savvy. So I think it will hold up for like the new guests. But then when people start like, you know, they book a few times, I think a few people just start to just, you know, it just loses its retention. And I think that's another thing, even on the host side, you know what I mean? But it's interesting to see. The future, I think the future is bright for Airbnb. It's just so many people that haven't used it that, you know, they'll still be making their money. They're a $1 billion company.
Yeah. And that's what I've always done, even like in the early days of Airbnb when we started using it to travel, you know, before we had our own Airbnbs. I would always, you know, because it was a new thing. And I would like, well, you know, do you have how much off of, you know, outside of this platform, you know, how much would it cost to rent? And they, oh, you know, I want to keep it in the platform, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Rented through Airbnb, got to know the host, and they said, okay, yeah, now we trust you, we know you, next time just, you know, call us and then just you can book directly with us, just send us a Zelle or whatever the hell. Yeah. You know, and so yeah, they just had to test the waters with Airbnb and then they were able to trust us and start letting us book directly next time.
For sure, man, for sure. Speaking of like trust, so this has just happened, and I think me and Mike were talking about it and he was saying, hey, what about chargeback protection? Right. That's one thing that came up. So funny thing is I dealt with some chargeback protection today. So a guest who we ended up refunding like a huge portion, a half of his stay because he was having issues. And then a tornado hit the area. And then it was just like, he had to get out of there. So we're like, look, dude, we'll just give you half your stay back and just get out of there and get to safety or whatever. We refunded him. We get a message from Stripe today saying, hey, this guy is saying you never refunded him and he's requesting all of his money. So I had to like go pull up all my bank state, pull my bank statement, pull my Stripe report, upload it to him. So American Express sees that we refunded this guy, and I had his card number. I had his first last name and who he was, and I highlighted all of it and sent it to him. So there are certain things you probably don't have to deal with. I mean, well, the only thing is with direct, you can at least dispute it. You know, with Airbnb, they just take your shit and go on about their business. I mean, you know, just being real, you know, that's just the platform. That's who they are. But yeah, man, that's one thing, you know, you might not have to deal with, but you have your say so.
And that's what you just said was spot on, because yes, people will say, well, I got protection inside of Airbnb for those chargebacks and all that disputes, and I don't, you know, Stripe and have to call and send all these, you know, credit card receipts. I don't know, whatever you got to do to get your money back from Stripe. But, and you're like, well, Airbnb at least to protect me. But like you said, on the other side, Airbnb could just say, hey, you know, he saw three cockroaches and we're giving him all his money back, and you don't got to say. So it's not like one side is safer than the other. They're just different, right? Now, yeah. I will say if you're into the hundreds of units and you're just trying to grow, I could see like the Julie George, you know, part of it. She's like, listen, I'm going to stick to one platform. Yes, it might not be perfect. They do everything pretty damn good, and I'm just going to focus on growth. And, you know, instead of having it here, I'm just saying, I see the argument for that side too. If you're just trying to, you
look
know,
at time frame, Airbnb's changed since those days.
Yeah.
You know, like the days that Julie was doing it, even the days when we started doing it, man, we were making shit. We had barely anything in there. We're making money hand over fist.
Yeah.
I do see if you could scale it now, but the problem is Airbnb brings out too many changes. So for example, even this, so you know, you can opt into this update, right? So a lot of people opted into it. This guy comes on the Airbnb host group and he's like, dude, why are all my listings blocked? He opted in early. So it's just certain things you just can't control. So I do understand it, though. Like if you do want to grow your business that way, because I mean, even the pandemic, you know, when the pandemic hit, like that lost a lot of customers. A lot of people were like, fuck this. I ain't depending on this no more. But I think... how many hosts did they say are on the platform? Like a million something, right? My thing is, yeah, probably more, but it's probably more than a million something. But my thing is, I think they have to find a way to retain the host and the guest. And that's why when I seen the summer update, I was actually kind of happy. And the reason why I was happy about the summer updates is it shows me that they, because Airbnb always shows their pain points. It shows that enough hosts are starting to band together, build their own brands and create their own communities, that Airbnb kind of has to pander to hosts a little bit. Even the last release with the whole removing the bad review thing, Airbnb starting to have to pander to the hosts, which is what the hosts want. So mm-hmm. I think everyone should keep that up because they're showing you shit. At the end of the day, money talks, man. If you're using money, you gotta fix that hole in your purse. So I think people, hosts who are doing it professionally and have their own platform, keep doing it. And then once you do go back to Airbnb, that Airbnb reservation isn't such like I hope this guest doesn't, like you said, find a cockroach. You know, we have at least have a say so. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, on that note, I'm going to be leaving Facebook and Instagram, and you can find me at geocities. I'm just kidding. That's an old school joke. Geocities. Remember that stuff?
No,
we got to build. Oh, man, I go too far back for you. That was back when I was in college. I was at the beginning of the internet, man. You were probably a little kid, but
Hollywood. That was, yeah. I'm at dial up. I had AOL.
Yeah. It was AOL. And GeoCities was a place you could build your own website. You know, here's a cool thing. You know, I don't know. We go off on tangents, but back then, this internet was a wild west. There were just websites spread across the whole page. You know, it was open. The wild west, open garden, right? But when Facebook and Instagram and these big companies came along and gobbled up a bunch of the internet, it became more of like walled gardens, you know, yeah. With less freedom. Because you could put any freaking website you want, make it crazy as you want. Maybe you still can't. But like back when people were just hopping to each other's
still websites, moving, man.
Huh?
Pornhub's still moving, man.
Yeah, Pornhub's still moving. Yeah. But if you do something, if you do some a halfway joke that gets taken wrong on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, you're gone, right? You're banned, shadow banned, all that stuff.
Yeah, social media does definitely
start. Yeah. And bring it back to metaphors, same thing with Airbnb. If you do something they don't like you doing, you're gone, you're banned, and there goes your income for people that are reliant on it. So it is great to have all these different tools in your tool belt. Case in point, one of our units, like I said, in the ghetto units, whatever, the ones we're hopping out of after these leases are up.
Yeah.
A lady had brought a dog, and she's just one of these ladies that complains about everything. And she said she was walking her dog outside and the dog started barking at the maintenance man. And she claims that the maintenance man said, "If it don't start barking, I'm going to kill your freaking dog." And of course, the maintenance dudes don't even speak English, you know. I'm just saying. So unless she said it in Spanish, and she's Spanish, but I don't think so. anyways, so she told Airbnb, and they shut down our listing, right? Threatening violence. I know it's against a dog or whatever, but it's her word against, and it's just sitting there in the case, and we're just waiting, and you know, it's whatever. But we're not freaking out because we have other avenues. We can just throw some, you know, travel nurse in there or whatever. We have VRBO. We have our direct booking site. You know, we have different places. Which back in the day when it happened to us, when we were just solely relying on Airbnb, I mean,
amen.
It was freaking out. I mean, just going crazy because we only had a handful of units. And if one of our units got shut down for something, I forgot, but he was just losing his shit because it happened. Now it's just, oh, don't worry. You know, we'll just get people from other platforms or put a travel nurse in there, whatever. We're, you know, it's no big deal. Yeah. But if you're totally relying on Airbnb, it is a big deal when a listing gets shut down or all your listings get shut down.
Yeah, facts, man. Yeah, that's a horrible thing. And I still got listings that are relying on Airbnb that I'm trying to get away from. Like I said, man, having those, being on different OTAs, but I'm real big on, you know what I'm saying, like I always say about building your brand, man. One thing I will say is those new MailChimp customer journeys are powerful. So if you don't have a MailChimp customer journey, you definitely need to get one of those. Me and my partner, we were on a call and we were just sitting there creating them. Those are powerful. If you haven't got a MailChimp customer journey, definitely get one.
Now, what is that exactly, a customer journey?
So basically, you can put them inside of like, okay, let's say someone signs up for ShareBnB, right? So, okay, they sign up, they get an email, the welcome email. Hey, this is who we are. I've actually automated this through StayFi. So, hey, they get a welcome message. And then I have it set up to a journey to where 10 days later, they get an email, 25. I think I've went over this before. 10 days later, they get an email, 25 days, 40 days, 70 days, they get an email. And by the way, what you'll notice is people always interact with your emails if they're right when you check out, and then a few, like a month or two, and then 2 months after they check out, that's when they interact with it the most. But so you set up the journeys. That's the journey for when they're welcome. I then set up another journey, their birthdays. So what I do is I don't have to keep sending them an email on their birthday, right? I set up a journey. So I set it up to where 2 weeks before their birthday, they get an email. Send, hey, happy birthday to you. If you plan on going anywhere, we have these places available. Then on their birthday, we actually wish them a happy birthday. And then we click this little box that says, once this customer is done with this journey, are they exited from this journey or they repeat it? We say they repeat it. So this happens every year on a constant basis. We then have another journey for annual events, Christmas, Thanksgiving, all that. So every week, every year, 2 weeks before the event, hey, we have places available. After that, the day of the event, happy Merry Christmas, happy Thanksgiving. And we put them in a customer journey. So we no longer have to constantly email these people. And then when you can start, kind of like how we were talking about in the last podcast, now I can start segmenting my data. Who do I want to send it to? Now I have it so where it's automatic. My VA no longer has to go out and send emails to all of the corporate housing people, all the insurance people on the first of the month. It's done automatically. And I can just, hey, repeat this journey. If we want to go in there and change the content that's sent, we can do that. But yeah, man, customer journeys, definitely get on it. It's way easier to track. I think See, and this is one thing why I like the new AI. A lot of people, like a lot of things can start implementing AI, like MailChimp, for example. It's starting to have a back end of AI, things that can be auto-generated. So yeah, it's just, I think AI is, a lot of people, you know, don't like it, but I love it because I think it's a lot of good things can come from it. And like even the emails, shit, you can have AI write up the damn email and personalize it. But yeah, man, that's like, those customer journeys are powerful, man.
I need to look into the customer journeys. Like I said, I'm just getting into MailChimp and I freaking love it, right? Mm-hmm. And I can tell who opens the emails and, you know, we're staying top of mind and it's.
Yeah. Check this out. On a customer journey, you can set it up to where, so any person that interacts or opens the email, 2-3 days later, they can get a discount code or they can, hey, we see you open our email and follow up with them. And it's all done automatically.
Mm.
Yeah, customer journeys are powerful, man. Yeah, I love MailChimp customer journeys, man.
Man, the I think I mentioned it on the show before, but man, what was surprised me is people are clicking on our Twitter. And we didn't even have a Twitter when I first started. You know, I was just like, oh, okay, Instagram and Facebook. That's what everybody has. But people were clicking on the Twitter and not really clicking on the Instagram and Facebook. I don't know if it's because corporate housing people are more on Twitter. Who knows what it is. But so I went and made a freaking Twitter. And that's what's cool about not just, you know, staying top of mind is great. And hopefully getting them to look at your listings and book. But just it helped. Tell me what I'm lacking in my business, you know? And I was lacking a Twitter account. And now we got a Twitter account and our VA is putting content on there. So, I mean, just by having different things to click and sending it out, it showed me, you know, oh, you're lacking this, that people are looking for your Twitter and you don't have one. You better fix that shit.
There you go. And that's one thing. See, you got to have KPIs, man. You got to have KPIs with anything you do, especially on the internet. Social, you got to have KPIs that you're looking at, you're trying to reach. So like mine has been, they click on my Instagram a lot. So that's why I was having my VA go in, hey, do Instagram every day, post an Instagram, post a Google post, post all that. One thing I'd also do is, one thing I love about MailChimp is you can put every single social on there, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. One place I will tell you to get on is LinkedIn. And we include our Google review button in all of our emails. So the people that have a good time, they usually leave a Google review. So yeah, man, it's MailChimp customer journeys are like next level. I love them, man.
I love that.
So we've talked about the MailChimp customer journeys. So the city, it's, I'm going to talk about a city in Texas, man, Plano. You ever heard about Plano?
I saw the thing today. Go ahead.
Yeah, they officially announced it that they're doing it. They're going to be banning all new short-term rentals for 1 year. So the only thing is I don't understand, and I'm trying to understand, is how do you determine what's a new short-term rental? Plano is partnered with Airbnb and Vrbo and all those things, and they've already been collecting taxes. So I'm assuming, I don't know how it's going to work. That's my thing. I'm like, if you go in there to the city of Plano and start to create a listing, are they blocking you? What are they doing? So, you know.
You didn't have to... Did I get a permit or anything in Plano before?
No, they just collect the tax.
Okay.
Yeah, they were always... Now, remember a while ago, I used to tell people, whenever you're starting up units and you're not sure about regulation, you can go and see where the city's collecting money. And that link still exists. You can go and Google, where does Airbnb collect occupancy tax, right? And then they'll give you the list of all those cities. Plano was one of them. McKinney's also another one that they collected in. But yeah, I don't know how they're going to be, because clearly they have the data, you know what I mean? And Airbnb has been passing over city data, you know, ever since they got, I think the city of Philadelphia indicted their asses. So they had to like send out messages saying, hey, we have to give up your information for legal purposes. But I don't know if Plano is going to do that, but I mean, they're collecting checks. So
we all there in Plano, right?
Yeah, we have one in Plano. And when it happened, when I seen it, I was like, hey, man, let's make sure we keep that unit in Plano, because that just drowns out competition. Yeah, competition can't come in. So, I mean, you might as well keep it. And that was one of the reasons, that's funny, but that's one of the reasons why I renewed my Dallas units, because I'm like, well, if they ban it in residential neighborhoods, we're commercial. We can, you know, you kind of wipes out some of the competition, sadly. But I mean, hey, it is what it is.
Business move.
Yeah, it's a business move.
Real quick, going back to what you said earlier, there are currently over 4 million Airbnb hosts worldwide and over six plus million active listings on the platform in over 100,000 cities worldwide. That's exponential growth right there.
Yeah. See, and I always tell you, short-term rentals aren't saturated, but Airbnb is. Like, it's, we talked about the Super Bowl thing, remember?
Mm-hmm.
That's a perfect example. People, and I was talking, who was I talking to? I was talking to someone, and he said, that's what made me not want to get into Airbnb. He goes, I saw the Super Bowl thing, and nobody was getting booked. And I was like, it's just, they saturated a market, man. And a lot of these people aren't sophisticated enough with all those people coming to town to get on the phone, start making calls, and you can get your places booked, but people don't do that, so...
I was listening to Jesse Vasquez, his latest episode about how is travel nurse industry dead, or is travel nurse, you know, hosting travel nurses dead, or I forgot what it's called, but you can find it. And he, and in the middle of the podcast, there's a spot where he's like, you know, I'm moving more and more away from hosting travel nurses and moving more towards insurance claims because those things pay out. And I was like, damn, Jesse, stay in your lane, bro. You're a travel nurse guy. But he's coming into the, he's seeing the light because we've been doing it. You know, I learned it from you guys. You know, I was like, damn, you know, get on these travel nurse owl and all owl marketplace and all that stuff. And it's, yeah, it's, especially now, it seems like Furnish Finder is almost dead, dude, or they don't want to pay nothing. That these travel nurses don't want to pay nothing for a place. And he explained it on the show because he had an actual travel nurse dude on there. And he's saying, yeah, they just been cutting their stipend in half, man. They're not getting the money like they used to hand over fist from COVID. And he said a lot of them were leaving the industry because it got too damn stressful. The job got too stressful, you know, traveling all around and getting, working all these hours and, you know, different cities. And it just got too much for them. So a lot of people are hopping out of the travel nurse industry. So it's less travel nurses and less need for them because COVID ain't here and then less pay for them. So it's a perfect storm of it's not. Not like it used to be. It used to be great, but you got to find, like I said, you got to diversify and find different things because one well dries up, you got another well over here.
Man, that's huge, man. Yeah, because the travel nurse thing, you know, I've been out of that for a while. I do it every now and then, but like what I try to do, I mean, and hey, check that out. That's one thing, going back to the travel nurses and going back to the summer updates. One of the summer updates was Airbnb's going back to its originality and really trying to beef up the Airbnb rooms play. And remember when I first got started, Airbnb rooms was travel nurses hit on those every time, you know, and sadly a travel nurse can't be real picky about a place. Hey, I want a 2-bedroom for $800 a month. Hey, you can go to this private room over here. You know what I mean? That's more of what they were fitting anyway. And maybe people need to go that Todd Baldwin route, that, especially right now, like that's what his business model is sustainable off of. Hey, if I have a 5-bedroom house, let's just rent them all out for $1,000 a month to a travel nurse. That's $5,000. You know what I mean? Mm. So maybe those days are coming back. And that's all I'm saying. Airbnb always tells you something with their releases and their data, you know, and maybe travel nurses could be one of them. Cause think about it. You're reducing the fees for 28 days. And you're trying to highlight private rooms. Travel Nurse Haven right there.
That's the name of one of my units, actually. Travel Nurse Haven.
There you go. Yeah, man.
And it kills. But it was another funny thing because I, you know, where do you go for travel nurses? Everybody goes to Furnish Finder, right? Everybody's on there now, whatever. But what I've noticed, I would say, man, it's crazy. I would say almost half of the people that hit us up from Furnish Finder or we you know, go back and forth with are not even travel nurses. It's like, it's a lot of corporate people. A lot of students are on there too. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people, kids coming in on internships and stuff like that. And people with families too. I mean, it's like, it's turned in. I'm glad he called it Furnish Finder instead of Travel Nurse Finder, you know, whatever the hell he thought of calling it, because as the market shifted and it's not as much travel nurses on there, which it was known as mostly travel nurses, it's able to cater, you know, the name gives it more freedom to cater to everybody, right?
Yeah. And the thing is, I got 3 insurance clients off Furnish Finder. But the thing about it is, see, and that's why people got to also understand the importance of OTAs. I think I touched on this a little bit the last podcast me and you did was if you're on the OTAs like an Airbnb, they can't view the property. So an insurance client will find you on Furnished Finder and think, oh, I can probably view this property. And then because, you know, they have to view the property and then send you the payment or whatever. So that is one thing with Furnished Finder where it can hit on all avenues. You can get insurance clients. You can get the travel nurse. You can get the corporate guy, you know. So those things are starting to be there. So that's I'm still on Furnished Finder. And I do add everyone on Furnished Finder to my MailChimp journey just to have them there. I had one lady hit us up today. Is like, excuse me, but who are you? My VA replied. I saw her in Hostful. You're replying. She was like, oh, I'm just we got your information from Furnished Finder. And of course, she was like, oh, well, this place is out of my price range. We were like, cool. We just wanted her in our system so we can always have constant contact with her.
Another thing is, and we discussed this in our a little WhatsApp group, but the corporate travelers are becoming more picky now, and that has never happened before, right? And so they've been like, yeah, the house is cool. It's just a little too far for us. I mean, like a couple miles too far, you know, for them. And it's funny because then they'll send me like, because here's how it works. Like a lot of times the corporate, you know, whatever corporate company it is, THD, CRC, well, there's a bunch of them. Well, they'll send me, okay, we got your place looks good. We got approval, blah, blah, blah. We're giving the information, your information to the guests, and they're going to reach out to you for a tour. Great. Sounds good. Back in the day, it was a sealed deal. As soon as it got a guarantee, it was done dizzle, right? And then we might get a phone call or a text from them. Could you send us more information? Where is this located? Blah, blah, blah. Is it a quiet, you know, they start asking all these questions. I'm like, the hell's going on? And then I'll get a message from, you know, from the adjuster, or not the adjuster, but the corporate, you know, housing finder. And they'll say, well, they're saying it's too far away from their house, you know, and even that far. I mean, and they're saying, well, they want this instead. They're looking for a 4-bedroom. They're looking for this. And sometimes the guests themselves will send me, hey, look, I found this on Zillow. Do you think you can get me into this? They get confused and they think I'm the corporate housing provider now. I'm like, and they send me a fucking picture of like a mansion, right? A McMansion over there in Mansfield or some crap. I'm like, yeah, that's, and it's like the rent, the regular rent's like $4,000 a month, unfurnished, whatever the hell. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not the finder. You actually toured my house, you know. I said, but you could ask your, I guess the adjuster or whatever, if she can put you in that.
Yeah.
But it's funny. They're getting so picky now, and
should have called the people whose house they wanted to rent and see if you could cut a deal. But go ahead.
Yeah, I tried that. I did try that, but then I lost touch. It's just so.
Yeah, you gotta have a system for it.
Well, that's the thing. These professional home finders or corporate housing providers, whatever, it seems like their systems aren't even that good because they just like, all right, everything's approved, whatever. Here, you deal with the guest. I'm like, what do you want me to do with them? You know, like, talk to them. What the hell? And then, like I said, the guest doesn't even know who the hell I am. They think I'm part of the team of THD or something. I'm like, no, you're touring my house. You wanted to stay in my house and it got approved. And when do you want to move in? Because I blocked the calendar for you guys because it said it was approved and boom, 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 let's do it. Oh, but it's not close enough to my husband's job. But can you put me in something else? I'm like, I'm not the finder. I don't know. It's just like they don't have the best systems either.
Me and it's funny you were bringing that up. And one thing I will say, when they start, basically when they start getting picky, quote unquote, what I'm starting to see in the market, because me and Mike, we did a market research on Marriott homes and villas. We started noticing just some stuff that I kind of knew was there, but just didn't really look at in depth. So what happens is with these insurance clients, they get access to all these properties, right? But what happens is you may have a property, like, for example, I'm going to tell you about Plano. We had our property is fully decked out, nice, decorated, nice big backyard, but we don't have a pool. Our property showed at like $250 a night or something like that. The dude with this nice ass property, beautifully furnished, just like ours, we can compete there. but he has his badass pool in the backyard. He's got one of the in-ground pools with the hot tub on the back of the pool. So I'm like, shit. But I'm looking at it, and he's listed at like $90 cheaper than this. Oh, I'm like, fuck. So I'm looking, and I start going through, and it was another guy. Now, this other guy, same situation, beautifully decorated, had a pool, and he was listed at the same price as the other dude. So I'm like, hold on. They're competing with each other. So I'm like, they're not even competing with us, and they're cheaper. And I was like, and I thought about it, and I'm like, it's because we fucking arbitrage. They own, we fucking arbitrage. And I said, that's the biggest hole in it. That right there is the biggest hole in it. And I'm like, he has all the room in the world to charge $90 cheaper than us, probably make more margin because he's going to keep getting that constant clientele because of how decked out he is. Yeah, man, that's how I was looked at. I'm like, damn, dude. And I was just like, I'm like, he must own that, man. It's just, you know, I could have put it into Home Snap and looked him up and seen if he owned it. But yeah, it's just a lot of, these are just certain nuances that have to be taken into account when you're hopping into the short-term rental space right now, especially right now. So money's drying up, people getting laid off. Shit, Amazon just laid off how many people, you know what I mean? So you got to be real skeptical about how you're getting into the game. And that's why I love our podcast, because we talk about sub 2 owner financing. You know, we're looking at, because like right now, Mahogany's trying to get her license. And I'm like, hell, let's just start doing it like this. When we're talking to these sellers, let's hit them from all avenues, you know, sub 2 owner finance, you know, outside of just the Burr method, you know, because we know that and that's our bread and butter. But having those tools on your tool belt is very important, because yeah, that shit right there is killing us. I'm like, dude, so we have to lower our prices because we can't compete. You can't compete.
You know, unless you're last man standing, right? And then plus, yeah. Don't forget about this, because some people with little toddlers, they might not want the house with the pool. They're afraid that it'll, you know, gonna open the door and jump in there without them knowing. That's a scary thing.
Correct. But at the same time, if the house with the pool is $90 cheaper and I can just close the door so they can't go out there, we're disadvantaged, man.
But it ain't about price either all the time if you're looking for corporate clients, because the insurance company is going to pay no matter what.
No, but that's what I was going to. They get that pool, that list on pool of properties, right?
Oh, okay.
So they see it side by side. They're like, well, I ain't about to stay over here. I can get a pool. Hell, I'm trying to relax anyway. My house probably burnt down or flooded or some shit. You know what I mean? So, you know, I'm going to use a perfect example. So my house that I got the big $6,000 a month for, right? What does it have? A pool, basketball court, tennis court, all that right down the street. They're willing to pay everything. You know what I'm saying? On that property, no one can compete with me. So every time someone like an insurance client sees, he's like, hey, one lady, she was willing to pay for it. She hadn't even seen it. I'm like, well, we just already rented it. I'm sorry, but damn, she hadn't even seen it. She just went off the photos. But yeah, man, providing value is very important. Being able to provide value and knowing your operating expenses, you know what I mean? Being very aware of that.
Now, you mentioned something, if you want to chat about it. You had to go to Arkansas Airbnb court. What was that about?
Oh man, I have that next Thursday. So this is continuing on to where, I think I've been talking about it before on the podcast. So basically they're trying to implement new short-term rental laws. So it's been like a 6-month process because they were telling us to rezone our property. Right. So we're like, okay, I really don't want to do that. But I was like, okay, this property's bringing in $6,000-$7,000 a month. I'm like, I can't just pass that up. I'm like, we'll go do it. So we went down there. We set up the rezoning stuff. We go in the middle of everything. We're waiting to go back to court for it. The court guy comes and says, hey man, I can have you guys file a deferment because the state of Arkansas is voting right now and has it in vote to where they will ban cities from making any short-term rental laws against your guys' businesses and everyone else. So I'm like, awesome. Oh, shit. So I was like, hell yeah. I'm like, go ahead and put us on the deferment. So we deferred it. So they voted last month. They lost the vote, right? They lost the vote. The vote didn't go through. So now they come back to us, and now we got to go to court again next week that court's going to get pushed back because we aren't on the, what is it called? The zoning docket until next month. So they're going to have to see us after that, because as long as we're on, that's one good thing. As long as we're on the docket to be in, to go see the zoning commission, we can operate as long as we want. So yeah. If the zoning commission keeps pushing stuff back, then we have to keep on going to court. Court has to give us an extension because they don't have it in zoning. And I think one of our guests from up in New York, she brought that up. She goes, they can't implement new zoning and just tell you to abide by it. They have to get it written, you know, all the law and structure for it pushed out. So that's what we're going through right now. So I have court next Thursday and then, no, this Thursday, I think. And then, you know, it's virtual, but I'm probably not even going to be there. My partner who owns the property, he'll probably be the one that's there. Cause I'm managing it for him. So yeah, man, you got to really stay on top of laws too. That's like, especially if it's on the short-term side, but this property's been rented out. This property's going to be rented out, I think, until January, because these people's house got jacked up after the tornado. Tornado took it out, flooded it. After took the roof off, flooded it. It really messed it up. So they'll be there a while.
They survived, man. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's good they survived.
One thing you mentioned in there, and you said that y'all want to really get in, is the subject to an owner financing. You know, and that's. Dude, I'm doing my first owner finance deal,
man. Let's go.
Yeah, it's exciting, and we're gonna be closing pretty soon. We're just waiting for the HOA docs at that condo. It's a 2-bedroom, 2-bath condo. You know, starting dipping my feet in the water a little bit, but it's a 5-year owner finance deal, and it's for, you know, we paid $5,000 down on the property, so we talked the property down from $100,000 to like $85,000. So we're putting $5,000 down, and then we're financing through him because he's the bank, right? The house is, the condo's paid off, so he's the bank, and he's owner financing us for 5 years at 3% interest, and talked him down from like, I think it was 5% or whatever. We had negotiated, yeah. And so I got 3% that, you know, instead of $10,000 down, we only had to put $5,000 down, 3% interest. We're taking over this thing. And the payment's like $300-something a month. It's so, you know, cheap. We already got a tenant in there. She's been in there for like 12 years, and she's Section 8 and guaranteed money from the $1,150 a month guaranteed from the government. So that's old lady. So she don't want to leave. She's cool. I'm like, cool, man. As long as the government's paying your rent, you can stay as long as you want.
See, Go ahead.
Okay, and then the other thing is, I did say, listen, you know, what happens if these rates are still above 6%, you know, when 5 years rolls around and it's not, you know, feasible, it's not, you know, it would suck to refinance. He goes, oh, you can put something, you know, we can extend it out another 5 years until interest rates cool down. I was like, all right, let's put that in the contract. And I put it in, you know, if rates are still over 6% in the after 5 years, we get to extend the owner finance for 5 more years. And he was cool with that.
You should extend it for 10.
It'll be 10 total. Yeah. No, just forever with this guy, right? No, like,
because you make a good point. That's one thing I'm always worried about with the owner finance deal is, can these damn interest rates come down? Because I don't know if I told y'all about my owner finance deal I almost put out there. I was actually going to be selling it. I was going to be the bank. So I don't know. Did I tell the story?
But the condo?
Who had the $70,000 in cash?
What happened?
I don't like to repeat stories, but if I haven't told it, cool. So, you know, I just finished that house in Arkansas, right? Okay. And I'm all in that house for $83,000. $83,000. So that's, I pulled $34,000 to buy it from my home equity line of credit. And then I used my business line of credit and some cash to fix it up. No, my business line of credit to fix it up. So I'm like all in at like $84,000. So my uncle cuts my grass every week. He cuts the grass. And so what happens is when he's cutting the grass, you know, they see it's fully remodeled. And then my guy, when he's there working on it, people go and ask him, you know, to see it, what's going on. And he tells them, hey, yeah, this guy out of Texas, he's building it up. So my uncle got one of the lady's numbers. He goes, hey, nephew, I don't want to just give this lady your number. I just want to, this is cool. He goes, she's trying to buy it. I'm like, yeah, I'll hear her out. And we end up getting her on the phone. And me and Mahogany talked to her, and she's like, I'll be honest with you, you know, Bob, I think she said her mom passed, and she was like, She left me this big $75,000 pot of cash, you know, and I was like, oh shit. So I was like, okay. But the thing is, I need to get all my money. I want to sell it for like 121, but I'm like, so I hit up my boy who's known as the owner finance guy, my boy, Emmanuel, shout out to Emmanuel and T Hope. We ran through it. I'm like, hey, how can I get it to where I can make some money? So he's like, my boy was like, is nothing on the, he goes, is any of this money leaned or anything like that? I'm like, nah. He goes, tell her, give you the full 70K cash. And if you want to sell it to her for 121, sell it to her for 121. She puts down the 70K cash, said, and leaves her with a note of like, what, 50K-ish, you know, 50K-ish. And then have her, that be the note. And then she pays you back your $6,000 that you need to pay off all your repair costs. She pays you that back in interest, but roll it into the big loan. And he was like, in a few months, you'll just have all your money back. I'm like, shit. So I ran it by her and she was like, nah, I really want to buy something with all cash. So now I'm still trying to figure out how I can present a deal to her to where it works for her. Cause I'd rather sell it to her cause she lives in the neighborhood. And she said she's 60 something. She goes, I've never owned a home. So I was like, damn, man. I was like, I really wish I could give it to you for like 75 cash, but I'll be losing money there. So I'm like, even if I was even thinking about going down to 90K just for her, like give it to her for 90K. And then if she's left with a 15K note and that comes to me every month, I could easily, you know, but I'm still thinking on it because I haven't refinanced it yet. Mm-hmm. And I'm still in the refinance phase and I'm actually going to follow up my refinance guy tomorrow. So like you said, that payment's $300 a month, right? Mm-hmm. Imagine if you were to turn that into a short-term rental. You have all the leverage over the competition. And this is what people are starting to find out, you know, because back in the day, you know, me and you came into this podcast and into real estate off of owning real estate. That's just what we did, right? So now you have all these people. Now interest rates are going up. That whole arbitrage play, it ain't always looking pretty because, you know, when people's interest rates go up, your rent has to go up. And that's what happened to us on that Plano property I was just telling you about where their properties are nicer than ours. So you have no leverage. You really lose a lot of leverage. So yeah, that's something to definitely consider. Like I love the owner finance and the subject too, just for that.
Mm. Oh, that's pretty cool, man. What's also is cool about it, you know, and I just wanted to do one. I really, really wanted to just get over that hump. I've never done one.
Yeah.
And I had the same thing. I was asking Adam James questions. What do I do? What do I do?
Mm-hmm.
And or asking other people too. And at the end of the day, hey, it's your decision, right? Right. It's your decision. Yeah. If you want to take money from, you know, take the lady's money, put her in your house and do what you got to do. I don't know. Maybe she could find another 30K from some family members. Who knows?
Well, even at that. Yeah. If she could, that'd be nice. But, you know,
I don't know.
Cause, and then I was wondering,
try to GoFundMe for her.
She told me her credit was like a 600, and I'm like, damn, I don't think she would really get like a good loan from the bank. So, but that's funny thing is, that's why people do owner finance for that reason, for people to get that or a lease option, you know.
But she don't want a payment. She don't want a payment.
I know, that's the only thing. I'm gonna see if I can talk her into it. Like, hey, if I sold it to you for 90K, your payment, you have a 15K. Payment's probably $300 a month, if that, you know, a month with interest. Yeah. I have to run the numbers.
Does she have a job and stuff or no?
No, she has Social Security.
Oh, okay.
That's the only thing. And I was like, because, you know, I asked all the questions. She was like, you know, she her current rent's $800 a month, but she has her roommate with her. And she goes, without her roommate, she can't pay it. So I'm like, I was trying to see if I can get her payment under 800, but I don't know how much she can afford. That's what I have to go back to her on.
So to give you all that money, and then you're going to go put her on special on Section 8 and then get her in your house with Section 8 money.
Nice.
Government has to pay all your note for you.
Shit, be nice. But yeah, I'm like, yeah, I was just wondering how I could pop that off. That's what I'm still working on right now. But if not, I'm just going to refinance and actually put that one on Section 8. You know, because the people who I'm refinancing with, the payment, it's going to come out to like 7.25%. The interest rate is going to be like 7.25%. So what I could do is I could collect $1,200 a month on Section 8. And then after $1,200 a month, my payment's $700, cash flow about $500. Can't beat that.
Build their little ADU in the back, and here, you can buy this one for $70K.
That one ain't even big enough, man. I wish I could. Speaking of ADUs, they are coming to Texas. So if you're in Texas, they are. No, they just did it. They just, the zoning just removed single family zoning in the state of Texas. So I don't know how the cities are going to handle that, but yeah.
Ooh, nice.
State of Texas just wiped that out.
So owner finance, I like I said, do my first one. It's pretty cool. It's exciting just to know there's no bank checking my credit. There's no bank asking me for 20 months of my freaking credit card payments and checks from my work. And there's nobody asking for all this stuff. It's just me and this guy doing a transaction to buy his place. What
interest rate does he give you?
3%. Yeah, 3%. As I know, I don't want to get out of it. I don't want to get out of it. But here's a cool thing too. And I'm learning all this shit as I go, man. Because we had a subject too. We had Adam Johnson on here doing the subject two, right? Subject two guy. That was really cool. But this is different. But the cool thing is you're still doing a transaction like you're buying that. Like I'm buying the house from him. We're going to go to the title company and title or deed, whatever you call it, is transferring into my name, in the business name, Argus Rentals, right? Mm-hmm. So it's going from his name to our name. And we're going to pay him, you know, the note, like he's the bank or whatever. And so in that meantime, I mean, it's in all the documents said, if I want to sell this place, I could sell it. It's mine. You know what I'm saying? Even though it's on this 5-year thing and then we have to finance out in 5 years or whatever, it's still in that 5-year period. If I wanted to sell it, if I want to do whatever I wanted to it, I can, because it's like my house. As long, I can't go sell it for 20 grand and pull out 20 grand and say, peace out, mofo. I do have to sell it and he has to be made whole as well. So the 80,000, yeah. If I sell it for 120,000, you know, I make my, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 40,000, and he makes, you know, he gets his 80,000. He's good. I'm good. You know, I made 40 grand, whatever. But that's the cool part of it.
Wrap
you know?
It too.
Huh?
And wrap it too.
And what is that? What is that exactly?
Owner finance it to somebody else on a wrap.
Yeah, that's a lot of things in play there. yeah. I'd rather
you ain't got to do it. I'm just showing people the power of doing that.
Yeah.
You can wrap it. You can see, the thing about a wrap is you can go get somebody to give you 20 grand cash. Mm-hmm. And then he's paying you every month. You just pay this guy. Now you got 20 grand in cash.
A lot of these flippers do the owner financing, and their play, they owner finance. You go, you want 300 grand for this house? I'll give you 300 grand or whatever. You know, they know it's going to be worth 500 after they fix it up. They do the whole thing like I'm doing: 5-year note, 3-year note, two year. What doesn't matter if they know they can fix it in 2 years or 1 year, they'll get just a 2-year owner finance deal. Whatever, it doesn't matter the length, because they know they got their team. They can go in there, do what they got to do, bring the value up, and sell it. So they're getting it owner finance for, 3, 4, 5% interest instead of going to hard money for that 12% with points and all that shit. So they're just going owner finance with this guy. You're going to get all your money. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to fix it up. You don't have to fix nothing. And then we're going to sell it. And then we're going to pay you out the rest of your money in this, time frame. And so it's so many ways to do this shit, man. There's so many creative finance ways to do this, to accomplish, when someone says I can't afford it, rich people say, how can I afford it, right? And that's so true, because there's so many ways to do it, man.
Yes, sir. Especially in real estate, man, everything's negotiable.
So yeah,
negotiable
everything. And I already started reaching out to properties that have been sitting on Zillow for a while, and just reaching out to the agency and, hey, would they be interested in owner finance? And yeah.
You know what? Owner finance and sub two would be my only
method. I mean, yeah, those two.
Yeah, either one. Those would be my only method of buying in Texas right now. Like, literally, those are my only two, because, like, buying in Texas, man, you have a high ass interest rate, but damn property taxes. So if you can offset that with a very low payment on your mortgage side, you can't beat that. Hold on. Your payment to him's 300?
Yeah, yeah.
So are you taking over the insurance and all that? Insurance?
Yeah. You have to do, it's like I'm buying the house. You know what I'm saying? Okay. So I'm responsible for insurance and taxes, yeah.
Now my question would be, what's your total monthly cost on that?
With so
taxes and his payment to you.
Taxes is around $2,000 a year.
Oh, you can't beat that. That's a win.
Yeah, and then the insurance is about $900 for the whole year, something like that.
That's a win. If you can only pay $2,000 a month, $2,000 a year in Texas, that's a win.
Yeah
you can't beat that.
Yeah.
Man,
I'm looking at $500, $600, $700 all in, $500, $600, or $700 all year, you know, $600 or $700 all year in. I'm thinking it's pretty good.
Yeah, that's real good, especially if they're gonna pay $1,100 on Section 8. That's a win all day.
And so, like I said, I'm reaching out on Zillow, and here's the thing: like I was this one house, and it's actually a house that Feta and them went to see. They didn't end up getting it, you know, but it was intriguing because it's over here, you know, close by, and it's a dome house, and it's in a city. It looks like an Epcot Center or some kind of dome looking roof, you know.
Yeah.
It's unique. And there are dome houses on, it's on one of the unique whatever on Airbnb. Yeah. So it checks a big check mark there. And it's in the city where you can Airbnb. You know, they got rules in place, you can Airbnb. And I think a lot of people aren't going to buy it because it's a little funky. It's a little different, you know. It's so, like the wives are going to be like, I ain't living in this crap, you know. And it has a pool, really nice, you know. So they didn't end up getting it. But I was like, well, shit, I'm gonna just throw it out there because they're having trouble selling this thing because the way it looks, it's unique. A lot of, you know, the kitchen ain't the biggest kitchen, and that's, you know, you have got a big, nowadays you gotta have a big kitchen. And so it's just a weird looking house, but I think it would look, you know, done up cool. It'd be something cool and, you know, to stay in as an Airbnb. Not to live in long term, or maybe, I don't know. But so I think that hurts its ability. It hadn't been able to sell it for a long time. So I reached out, hey, would they do owner financing? And was subject to, and the agent said, well, I think it's an unassumable loan, which that's not what I'm asking, because I've heard of these assumable loans. You've heard of that, where you can kind of buy a house from somebody, go through the whole, you know, close on and everything through the banks, and you're able to
take over the mortgage,
move the mortgage into your name. That's assumable. And that way you can keep their 3% or 4%, whatever interest rate they have, right? Mm-hmm. That's a thing right now. It's an assumable loan. But I mean, of course, the banks, they don't want that, right? They want you to pay a shitload of interest. So they're not a lot of them. But subject to is a different thing, though.
Yeah.
Their mortgage is staying in their name. I have to explain this to the agents. No, the mortgage is.
Oh, you can't. Hold on. You were talking to an agent?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you. Yeah, you ain't talking to dead water. You're talking to an agent. You got to call the owner.
But I'm learning too, because here's what a buddy told me. He's like, well, if you explain to the agent, it's still like buying the house, right? You're still going to get your agent payout. And the other one, the buyer agent, seller agent, they both still get their payouts, right? No matter what. It's the fact that the mortgage.
Yeah. You would have to tell them you're going to pay them out of pocket.
I would have to pay them out of pocket. So the house is $300,000. I'd be paying her $6,000. You know, you're still going to get paid, lady, but the mortgage is going to stay in their name. If they're out of the, if they're already moved, they're out, they don't even live in the state anymore. And they just want this payment that they're just, you know, this albatross, that's hanging on their neck. It goes, here's a way they can get out of it. And you can get paid out too. You don't have to be like showing a million people this house that no one's going to freaking buy. Subject to. So I'm going to do another phone call with her.
Yeah. Hit the eight. Yeah. If you're going to, because me and Mahogany, we sometimes do agents, sometimes not. But if you do hit an agent, first thing you got to ask them is what their commission is. Because the thing why people don't like dealing with agents, especially people who want to sell off market, is, as my mentor always says, they have that damn commission breath. And they're trying to make sure they ain't getting fucked out of their commission. So, yeah, I would ask them, what is their commission? You know, and then be like, hey, I'll pay you your commission. But this is how subject coup goes. And I think you'd hit every time. Because I think if you can hit sub two deals and owner finance deals with Texas interest rates, with the interest rates right now we're going through in America and with Texas property taxes, you can kill on short-term rentals. Because you're walking in with lower startup costs and lower operating expenses. That right there is the most powerful piece. If your operating expenses are lower and you can provide more value, you can win every time. That's why if you're doing the midterm rentals, it's good to know, like if you're starting a midterm rental, the market research is already done. When you start seeing extended stays, Studio Six extended stays, they've already done $1 million, $100,000 worth of research. All you got to do is just see who you're their housing and how much are they charging, you know? Cause right now, I think the most important piece right now for anyone getting into the short-term rental space, know your numbers, but make sure you see if you can get your operating costs extremely lower than the competition. That's a help. You know, you got to be selling Blue Magic like here, like on American Gangster. I got a better product and I sell it for half the cost. Straight up.
Great movie.
Yeah, well, you know,
it was, man. The businessman right there. So shit, just slipped my mind.
What was
slipped my mind. No. What you were saying, and when we jumped into this market, you know, it was at a great time. We got into starting buying houses when the market was kind of softer, was low. The prices were low, way lower. And the interest rates were low. It was a perfect storm for getting great deals on houses, right? And we always heard the older guys, hey, you make money when you buy. Mm-hmm. And then what they meant by that is getting the good deal is how this deal is going to end up. You know, I was like, what are you talking about? I can buy this house and my mortgage is going to be $900 a month and I could put someone in there for, you know, $1,500. I'm winning right now. It doesn't matter how I buy. But all that shit changes, right? And then, like you said, so if you're buying at a 7 or investor rate, 8% interest rate on a $300,000, $400,000 house, ooh, good luck making money against someone that's locked in at 3% who bought it at $200,000, who could rent it $1,000 less than you and still be making out. Right. You know, you make money when you buy. That's what they say.
You do. You do. In every market and transaction that's going on, you make your money when you buy. And that is why I tell people, you can buy on market, you know, but you are going to run out of cash. You know what I mean? That's the thing. If you buy on market, you're going to run out of cash. You got to go re-up. But if you're buying strategically and creatively, you can win every time. Or when a situation where you can refinance all your money back, or you don't have to put any money down at all. You know, those are the people that you're going to make it longevity wise, because you do. At the end of the day, you make your money when you buy.
Yeah. You know what I'm going to do on this show? Yeah. I'm going to out the name of a deadbeat renter. I'm going to just put their name out there right here. Fuck getting sued, all that stuff. I don't care. You know what, who knows this deadbeat renter is?
Who?
His name is Elon Musk.
I thought you were calling out one of your tenants. I'm like, no. It's that bad. You going through an eviction process?
Shit. But you heard the story, right?
No, what happened?
Okay. So he took over Twitter, of course, you know, bought Twitter for whatever, billions, $44 billion, whatever the hell. And he went in there. He's been cleaning house. He got rid of half the freaking employees, you know, got rid of the dead weight, changed the culture in there. One thing that was a huge expense for him was the Twitter headquarters in the middle of San Francisco, right? High rent San Francisco. And so he's paying, but the market has turned and shifted way since Twitter took over, you know, started renting out that space for their headquarters. And the rents, you know, have dramatically dropped in what is it called? Commercial real estate, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this, especially San Fran, everybody freaking left San Fran. And so it's just plummeted. So he's like telling the landlords, you know, technically it's landlords, right? Because he's paying rent to somebody, corporation, whoever it is. Hey, we need to renegotiate these rents because we're paying way more than they should be. And pretty much he got to screw you. That's what the rents are. You're going to pay me. He's like, all right, well, I'm just not going to pay rent no more. You can sue me. And so, wow. So here's that's, but it's his strategy. He's like, we can do this. I could tie you up in court. I got all the money in the world. How are we going to play this? You're going to lower these rents. And so that he just stopped paying rent. And now it's like they're negotiating and they're going back and forth because, you know, you really can't win in a lawsuit against the richest man on the planet. Right. So anyways, and that brought up, I think Mike Brown brought it up to the group. Would you stop paying rent to get a better deal on rent? And then he brought up the Elon Musk thing. And I was like, damn, That's cool.
Gotta have some leverage.
He has a lot of leverage.
Yeah, I gotta have some leverage, man. Because I know he's moving. Did he move Tesla to Austin?
I know the trucks. They make the trucks there, and they make the They make a few of the cars there. They still have a heavy presence in California. But
what if this this happened in California, right?
Yeah, this one's San Francisco. This is Twitter. This
blue state. Try that shit in Texas, man. You're victim of shotguns and pit bulls. Try that shit. That's some California shit. Try that shit in Texas.
So that's the thing, man. I mean, and it brings up, and I remember back in the day when I was on airplanes a lot, and back before, you know, smartphones and shit, there was the magazine, the airline magazine that you read, and I had some good articles and shit in it. Yeah. But I remember one, the commercials were heavily tailored towards business people, business travelers, because that's who would travel the most, right? Back then, you know. And so I remember seeing this ad, and it says it was a cool ad, because it says, you know, great, you know, good businessmen negotiate, great businessmen renegotiate. And it showed like this, I guess it was some kind of law firm, or it was some kind of whatever it was, this company that helps your company go in. And it was at a time when the economy was shit, right? Mm-hmm. It was a time when the economy was crap. And so these ads were popping in the magazine saying, you know, this team, this company, this law firm, whatever, will help you go and renegotiate all your contracts. Because yeah, when shit was booming, you signed all these contracts, all these people paying them a shitload of money for their services, but the economy shifted. So you need, it's part of business. You go in there and you renegotiate.
Yeah, got to.
And so we always learn the art of negotiation, but there's an art to renegotiation. And that's what Elon was is displaying for us right now. He's a pretty smart guy.
Oh yeah, he is. He is. Man. Yeah, man. You know, it is what it is out here, man. It's crazy. It's getting a little cutthroat, but make sure you're on your P's and Q's, and you'll make it.
It's hard out there for a pimp.
It really is right now, man.
You know, crazy day. And I was going to, you know, I wanted to go into a little bit of adversity, right? Mm-hmm. And because everybody, you know, Mike Tyson, everybody has a plan till you get punched in the face, right?
Yeah.
And so the economy, man, it's turning, punching a lot of people in the face, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people have definitely hopped out of our game. We're still sticking around, you know. We've been boxing for a while. But I wanted to touch on that. And it's the longer you do this, the more you learn to not panic over shit, right?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't help anything.
Yeah, that's a fact.
And so I guess, and this could be a topic for another podcast, you know, how to put some plans in place to where adversity hits, you're going to be all right, you know?
Yeah, you got to have me. I know I'm a backup plan guy. That's why I tell people, you read that book, Surrounded by Idiots, it'll tell you how you operate, and then you can find yourself in it. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. Me, I'm very strategic. So when shit hits the fan, I'm usually ready for it, but it makes me very cautious. And so certain deals I should hop in, I won't. But with Mahogany being my business partner, she'll hop in a deal, you know, and then we can balance it out, and then we can roll with the punches, and I can have a plan for every puncher. When we do get punched in the mouth, I can have a plan for that. Because yeah, that's very important. You know, people don't have plans. People don't operate correctly. And I'm going to bring something up that you brought up. You just said, being when you get punched in the mouth. This is one thing that's been going around on short-term rental forums. And I'm not going to say it's bullshit, but I've seen some people that in the future could get bit in the ass. And that is not having proper insurance, the proper insurance to cover your property. And let me tell you why. So I've been noticing people saying, hey, I don't use proper because it's expensive. And I was like, well, damn, they'll be like, oh, I'm paying like half the cost. I'm like, shit. And you're getting short-term rental insurance. They were like, yeah. So I asked a guy on his Facebook, because he knew me from the podcast. I'm like, bro, you mind sending me like your deck pages? Like, what all does this thing cover? And I looked at it and I'm like, it was the shittiest insurance I'd ever seen. I'm like, the reason why proper is expensive is because it covers bed bugs. It covers law business, loss of income. Something breaks, they'll fix it. If it's, you know, if you want to pay your deductible, which is $1,000-something, they paid me out $36,000 for stuff that broke and flooded in my house. I look at them, and that's one thing people need to make sure you understand: insurance declaration pages. Because when you get punched in the mouth and you ain't got the proper insurance on your property, man, you can be in a world of hurt. You can be in a world of hurt. And yeah, I think that is a really good podcast we can have. Because yeah, adversity, people don't prepare for it, but man, you got to be prepared for it.
Next podcast, the adversity podcast.
The adversity podcast.
What to do when the shit hits the fan.
Yeah, that's a fact, man.
Murphy's Law, right? What can't go wrong will go wrong.
Will go wrong, yes, sir.
Multiple times. Ah, geez. Yeah, this is a great cast, man. I always love doing the podcast. This is fun.
Yes, sir. So, man, where can people find us?
You know what? Leave us this cool thing called SpeakPipe, SpeakPipe.com/LiveLetThrive. Go there and you can hit that record button and leave us a message on the show, and we'll play you on the show, man. We'll play your pretty voice on the show.
Speaking of SpeakPipe, that will be in the show notes. And if you're watching on YouTube, oh, by the way, I keep forgetting to tell y'all, it will be on our link tree in the show notes. Go to our link tree. We have a bunch of cool stuff there. For the people that are in Texas, I think this episode won't even be out, but we are having another live podcast recording next week on Thursday. So if you're in Texas, it's going to be only enough for 6 to 10 people to come. So very small setting. And then you will be able to ask questions after the show, and your questions will be answered live on the air, and all the fans will be able to listen and hear that. But yeah, man, definitely reach out to our SpeakPipe. That'll be in our link tree, and leave us a message and we'll play it on the air. Like, if you have a question, any concerns that you're going through on the short-term rental space, we'd like to answer for you on air. And yeah, you can find us Instagram, TikTok. We're doing a lot of Instagram and TikTok stuff right now. Instagram, TikTok, email us liveletthrive@gmail.com. And yeah, hopefully, if you are listening, hopefully, I don't know if this podcast will be out, but yeah, see if we can see you at our live recording.
And we're coming back to Clubhouse, y'all.
We're going to do Clubhouse?
Yeah, we're doing Clubhouse.
Okay, yeah, definitely. We'll definitely be on Clubhouse again. And yeah, we definitely want to be more engaging with our fans, because y'all been listening for a long time. And thank y'all for continuing to support us. And we are out.
Peace.
Later.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Live, Let, Thrive. Be sure to tune in next week for all the latest in the world of Airbnb and all that entails. Bye-bye.